Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to New Orleans. Welcome to APHA. My name is Omar Khan. I'm the incoming chair of the section on international health, and I'd like to welcome you to a very special invited session. Our section has put this together for the last several years, and the title, as you see, is International Maternal, Neonatal, and Child Health. And this is a spectacular group that is organized by my friend and colleague, Dr. Richard Derman. And I think you'll hear some really groundbreaking stuff from around the world, from the work of the Global Network on Women's and Children's Health Research. And it's a great way to update us all on what's going on in that particular field. So Dr. Derman is going to moderate the panel. We're going to have folks go in order. And I think we'll try to hold questions until the end, unless there's any burning ones. So I'm going to introduce Dr. Derman, and then he'll introduce the rest of the panel in turn. As I mentioned, Richard and I, we work together at the Medical Center of Delaware, which is Christiana Care Health System. Richard is chair of obstetrics and gynecology, as well as the director for the Center for Women's and Children's Health Research. He has been a principal investigator for the Global Network as well. He's a professor of OB and GYN at Thomas Jefferson University in Philadelphia, as well as at the University of Delaware. So please join me in welcoming our panel and our moderator.
Well, it's great. I'd rather be up in front, but they told me they're recording this, and so I can't do what I usually do, which is what our Surgeon General did, go up front and sort of flail your hands and do such a wonderful job. But I think we're committed to being at the podium this morning. So obviously, this is our fourth year, actually, and I want to give special thanks to Dr. Khan and to the organizing committee for inviting us back to present to you. And what is sort of unique about this session, because there are a lot of sessions on global health, is that we're going to be focusing on global health research. And that is sort of a unique approach. We're going to look at research that addresses the leading causes of death in women, particularly babies around the world, and those that cause the greatest morbidities as well. So we're going to talk about some of the new research findings, and some of these have raised lots of eyebrows around the world. You'll be hearing about that. Some of the ongoing research that we're doing, and if we have time, we'll talk a little bit about research yet to be initiated. So I have no conflicts. Let me begin with, how are we doing? The MDG4 goals, so we all remember that these were to try to reduce mortality in infants and children by underage by two-thirds, by 66%. And what we maybe we don't realize is there were three separate goals inherent in that. The first was under 5 mortality, where we've done reasonably well. The second was infant mortality rates, so mortality under the age of 1. And thirdly, which most of us don't even address, is some marker for immunization, and measles was used, and it was to get to measles immunization by year 1 of 80%. And I think they're on track and moving well in that direction, although I don't know if that number will be reached. So the big issue with all of this, and you'll hear this from our panelists going forward, is you're only as good as your data. So you can set all of these standards that you want for measuring how well you've done, but if you don't have good data, you're not able to go ahead and present it properly. And so I think this was recognized early on by many, many groups around the world. And so this is called the countdown countries. It started with 68, 69 countries. There are now 75. And the Lancet is a collaborator in this. And they've agreed to use best evidence to go ahead from whatever sources within the country to go ahead and monitor these MDG goals 5, 4, and 5, as well as other goals going forward. And so with these 75, this is sort of the data that we're presenting from you. So under 5 mortality has done reasonably well. We have actually been able to reduce the goal of two-thirds from 12 million to 7.6 million. So that's good, but this is healthography. And where you live, whether it's your zip code or your country or rural or urban, plays a big role in how you're going to play out. So if we take a look at this number, it looks pretty good. But 23 countdown countries, in fact, are on track to go ahead and beat or sustain the goal. 13 have made no progress, and the other are en route. So it's all over the place. We still have a large job to do. But I think our biggest challenge is with newborn survival, with stillbirths and preterm births. There we've made the least amount of impact. And this becomes very important because 44% of all child deaths occur in the first month of life. And 75% of all newborn deaths occur in the first week of life. And if we take a look at when the highest proportion is, it's actually in the first 24 hours of life. And this is our greatest challenge in terms of research as we move forward. This is just a slide from UNICEF that recently came out to show that we've actually made some progress in neonatal mortality, but we haven't gone as far as we need to go. And I've just focused in that second tier for showing Southeast Asia, where perhaps the heaviest burden resides. So we've seen about a 40% reduction, you know, out of the two-thirds, and this is sporadic based on the country data that you look at. And if we take a look at the causes of neonatal mortality, they all sort of blend into one. Birth asphyxia, preterm birth, sepsis, you almost don't know which is cause and which is effect. But these are primarily the causes of preventable death. And when I say causes, we know ways in which we can reduce this number rather dramatically. So if we're looking to avert 3 to 4 million deaths in babies, what do we need to do? We need to go ahead and provide antenatal care. Now, we don't need to provide 22 visits of antenatal care. The data would suggest that 4 visits probably are enough. We need that every birth attendant, whether they're skilled birth attendants, TBAs, nurses, physicians, all have resuscitation skills. Very, very important. We need to be able to treat maternal infection during pregnancy, and inherent in that is availability of antibiotics. We need to practice clean birth practices, whether you use a checklist or not. Care of the umbilical cord becomes very important to prevent puerperal sepsis. And immediately, we need to go ahead and put baby in skin-to-skin, exclusive breastfeeding. This is really important. If we can all tie this together, we have a great opportunity of reducing that number. So how are we doing in terms of NDG Goal 5? That's maternal mortality. 45% reduction since 1990. Now, we're doing poorer in this modality than we are on the others. So we're supposed to get to a goal of 75%. There are still almost 300,000 women dying around the world. And this is despite the fact that we have increased the skilled birth attendance to 68% in our countries, and that 52% of all pregnant women are now having 4 or more prenatal visits. So we've moved, as WHO has pushed us, we've moved this curve forward, but we're really not seeing the impact that we ought to be seeing, and we can talk about that. So what's killing our women? What's killing our women? That hasn't changed much. 80% of the deaths are associated with severe postpartum hemorrhage, with an increase in preeclampsia, eclampsia, underlying hypertensive diseases, a pregnancy that Dr. McGee will be speaking on in a bit. Infections are a big area that we haven't really tackled, and it's really underreported. We know that unsafe abortion plays a role in that as well. And when you look about superimposed malaria and AIDS and tuberculosis, obviously that skews the curve in the wrong direction. So just to show you that we are not immune in the United States from this issue, this is recent data that was just published from the CDC, showing that in the United States, our trends, as compared actually to the trend in Europe, which is going down, our trends in maternal mortality in the U.S. are going in the wrong direction. Part of this is because of better capture of data and coding, but most of it is not. And if you can read those 3 little bullets at the bottom, you can see that if you're African American and living in the United States, you have about 3.5 times the risk of dying. And if you're not a Caucasian American and you're not African American, the risk is still 50% increased. So we need to do something about this, and we actually don't have all of the answers. But I'll go ahead and suggest to you at the end strategies, but maybe to move this agenda forward. So I used to go ahead and tell our colleagues at Christiana, where I work, that asked us, why do we do international health? I'd say, well, the same thing that kills moms and babies in India, for example, kills moms and babies in the United States. In truth, that used to be the case. It is not, in fact, entirely the case now, because if you look at the most recent CDC data, And I might say that this curve looks very similar to the European curves as well. Look at the leading cause, cardiovascular disease. Second leading cause, infection, not postpartum hemorrhage, not preeclampsia, eclampsia. Non-cardiovascular diseases, meaning chronic diseases like diabetes and others. Cardiomyopathy, fourth on the list. And then we get into the usual suspects when we move forward. So this change is actually emanating around the world. This will affect places like India where diabetes is so rampant. But we know our population is older. We know they have more caesarean sections. We know they are obese. And a lot of that relates to this situation, both in the United States and in Europe as well. So a word about obesity. I believe last year, for those who were here, I spent a fair amount of time talking about it. But I keep wanting to bring it up because we know that the mortality rate in the United States, if a woman is significantly obese, was 4.6 times higher than if she is not. In Europe, 50% of all of the women who died were obese or overweight. There's a higher rate of sepsis, 2 to 3 times increased, and at least 50% caesarean section rate in these women. So it's a major issue that needs to be addressed. In fact, the World Health Organization has basically said it's the most prevalent health threat the world over. 1.6 billion adults are now overweight, 400 million are obese, 8% have a BMI of over 40, they're morbidly obese, and really what's scary is the rate has doubled in the last 5 years. So obviously this is moving more rapidly even than tobacco use had when we take a look at some of those curves around the world. So we're going to be hearing a lot about our work in India, my collaboration with my partner, Dr. Gowder. But this is from the National Family Health Survey data. It says that ever married women who are obese or overweight increased in India from 11 to 15%, short period of time, responsible for 35% of the maternal mortality. You wouldn't think of that in India, and indeed it's mostly an urban phenomenon, but it is going to be moving into the rural areas. Right now in the rural areas, we have the other extreme of underweight and stunting. So even what we used to believe were the causes of postpartum hemorrhage and the causes of death are a little different based on where you live. Again, the theme of this overall conference, healthography. So we know that a tonic uterus is responsible for about 90% maternal mortality deaths around the world. And that's work that we did initially with our misoprostol study in addressing that issue. But if we take a look at why people die in the U.S., in Europe, and in other parts of the world, they do bleed heavily, but it's probably just 70%, not 90%, that's strictly an atonic uterus. The rest of that bleeding is abnormal placentation, meaning the placenta attaches inappropriately. And a lot of that is due to multiple caesarean sections. And you know, we're pushing facility births, so those caesarean section rates are going to go up around the world as well. We have to keep a very, very close eye on that phenomenon. So, how do we bend the curve? What are we going to do? Since we said with facility births, it hasn't been a panacea. It's been a step in the right direction, but not a panacea. So we know that we have positive outcomes only when OB, peds, and anesthesia are available 24/7. That really is a requirement. We need blood products and IV antibiotics available. Team training, which is often, not done, very, very important. And we have to, again, look at our outcome data. Every time there's a death or a near miss, it really needs to be looked at very, very carefully. So this is my last slide of the first session in the morning. And this is really placed to the social determinants of health. The best predictor of a pregnancy outcome is the state of health of a woman when she first enters pregnancy. We have to hope that every pregnancy is a planned pregnancy. The idea of child brides has to go away, and I think we can then really affect and bend that curve. So I thank you very much, and let me turn the panel over to Dr. Shiva Gowder. Dr. Gowder is professor of physiology, head of our research unit for women and children's health at Taylor University, Jawaharlal Nehru Medical School, and has been a collaborator with us for about the last 13 years.